You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, people? It's your boy Cam J, back with another episode of Off the Edge with Cam Jordan. Now, as we gear up for another exciting season, I wanted to reflect on some of the incredible guests I had the pleasure of sitting down with last season. But hey, don't worry though, I got you. New episodes coming your way real soon. Relax, I got you. But in the meantime, in between time, let's rewind and play back some of my favorite interviews from season one. This week, I'm bringing you an interview with the true leader of men. A New Orleans savior, a man who's won a Super Bowl right down under where the Super Bowl is coming up this upcoming year. Some call him Breezes, I call him Drew Orleans. That's right, folks, I'm talking about none other than my former quarterback, Drew Brees. Take a listen.
It is my honor and my privilege to bring in a teammate, a leader of sorts, a leader of men, because beyond just football, he does everything. Well, I don't know who he doesn't lead. You look up to him. I look up to him. The world looks up to him. It's Drew Orleans, Drew Breeziana. It's Drew's way. It just is what it is. Drew Brees, Breeziana. My dog Mark V would hit him with all types of nicknames while he was throwing. Nice ball, number 9. I see Drew Breeziana is sailing today. You know, those type of situations as we were practiced from 2011 through 2020, when I was teammates, he was part of the New Orleans Saints from 2006 to 2020. Woo! 15 years of New Orleans. Drew Brees, I appreciate you tapping in with me, big dog. Welcome to Cam, you know, Off the Edge with Cam Jordan.
Cam J, you make me feel good, man. I don't have a hype guy anymore, you know?
Ah.
When I'm feeling down or depressed or, you know, just like down on myself, I just gotta hit you up. You and Mark, man, y'all are my guys.
Come on, man. You're my goat. You're my goat. Yeah. You know, like nobody in the history of the NFL has ever thrown for more 5,000 yard seasons. You know, now that you're retired, I can say these things with confidence. Nobody's gonna do it. You know, Super Bowl MVP. When, you know, been to the Super Bowl, could have gone back to 2 or 3 of them in 2011 and 2019. Yeah. Like could have been records. Could have been us.
Hey, I wouldn't trade any of it, man. Those 15 years. And shoot, we had 10 seasons together, Cam. 10.
10.
I mean, you came in as that young pup, you know, talented, but kind of big eyes, right? Like trying to figure it out. And now look at you, man. You're like, you're the old dog. You're the one everybody goes to. You're giving out words of wisdom and advice based on all this wealth of knowledge and experience you have now, man.
No doubt. That's great. Who's your jeweler? Who's your suit guy?
All right.
Who's your like I'm like, bro, like, can we get to football?
Yeah, exactly. Hey.
Right. Who's your barber? I don't have a barber. I've been doing my hair like for so long. I got a great barber now, but like, you know, like who's your masseuse? I can't give you my masseuse because I use him and I can't have him being too congested.
That's right. Yeah. There's some secrets that just, you know, can't give out, you know?
Absolutely. But like I said, leaders of men, Drew, let's talk about this. My kid plays in your league. I say it's the Drew League. I believe the name of the league is FNA. I call it Drew Orleans Ball. But you started that up a couple years back. When did that start up? How did it get to New Orleans?
I've coached just about all my boys. So let's see. This is hard to believe, too. My boys are now 14, 13, and 11. So ninth grade, seventh grade, sixth grade. But had a chance to coach them all the way up. So, yeah, we started – yeah, Baylen, it was actually, this started when Baylen was in kindergarten. He was playing in a flag football league. And it was a good league, but it was one of those things where I just saw all kinds of areas where it could improve, from just the overall family experience to the rules to, and then it really just got me on this path of, you know, youth football is interesting because once you get the tackle, it is what it is, but the flag game is so different because there's all these different leagues and they're playing by different rules. Some are 5-on-5, some are 6-on-6, some are 7-on-7, different field sizes, different flag, like all kinds of stuff. And I was like, how do I standardize this to a point where this becomes the type of flag football that's played that everybody really embraces because it's safe, it's fun, and it prepares kids in the best way for tackle football if they choose to want to go on and play tackle. So that was really the kind of the objective was, how do we create the gold standard for flag football that kids can play and enjoy with like the reality that, you know, maybe 30 to 40% of all the kids that play flag football end up going on and playing tackle. But that's not the point. The point, I think, for me and for you is football has meant so much in our life, and it's taught us so much about life. We've developed so many traits, qualities, attributes as a result of football. And I think it's important that every kid gets a chance to experience that. And it doesn't have to be the tackle level, but how can we help them develop a love and a passion for the game that they'll carry with them forever? And if it wasn't for flag football, they may never get a chance to experience it. So how can we create the experience possible? So that was like the origin and I think the, you know, really the story behind how FNA started. And that was in 2017 in New Orleans. We started off with three leagues and then brought it to California, and then leagues started popping up in Texas and in the Midwest and other places. So now we've got 30 leagues nationwide, representing about 8 states. And it's awesome, man. It's awesome.
Right. I was like, it's taken off. My daughter, my 5-year-old Nia, plays flag and football. She just scored her first touchdown this past weekend. And as a dad, I was like, oh, she's finally in there. Because at 5 years old, you either have like the really, really good kids that I swear have been training since birth, and you have everybody else at 5 years old, they're just like, oh, and there's an anthill right here, and just lollygagging. Yeah. Man, yeah. It's like complete opposites. And now, like, you know, you see that difference. But she just scored her first touchdown, and previously she was on soccer, and now she's like, Dad, I like playing flag football. I was like, hey, baby, that's all I want to do, expose you to something different.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, here's the other thing is, you know, they just made the announcement last week that flag football will be in the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles. Unveiling flag football. So it's going to be a 5-on-5 version, which I think is probably more appropriate just as you think about, you know, the worldwide kind of embracing of the sport of football. That probably kind of brings the competitive levels, you know, more equal to, you know, across all countries. But you saw it this year with what they did with NFL teams, basically having a chance to partner with different countries. Like I went over to France on behalf of the Saints. You know, so that France is kind of like our sister country, you know, for the New Orleans Saints. So it's one of our charges now, you know, across all the NFL teams is to, you know, partner with a country around the world and then help provide support resources to help grow the game of football in those countries. So that here in 5 years, we're going to have young men and young ladies out there representing their countries playing flag football. So what a great way to continue to grow the sport, you know, around the world. And also, I think for young girls, give them a vision for what's possible, right? Like young girls up until this point have been playing flag football and hey, it's fun, but at some point it ends. Well, right. Now it doesn't necessarily have to end, right? Like you have a chance to go on and represent your country at the Olympics, become an Olympian doing that.
Drew, I'm not saying you're timeless, but I'm saying like you were slinging the rock at 40 years old. 2028, are you still going to try and get out there and sling that thing one good time? I just saw you just last weekend, Drew. I saw the heater with the left.
You saw me throwing left. Look, if I trained, man, it's so tempting, bro. It's so tempting.
I might change positions by 2028. Like, I may lose 30 to try and get in.
Bro, I think I've passed the baton on to the young Breeze kids. You know what I'm saying? Okay. And to Tank Jordan. You know, I think we're passing the baton on to the next generation to go represent the U.S. in the Olympics.
I'm saying, like, your oldest kid to be like 18 or 19.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we're here.
Right about time. That makes sense. Hey, I might have to hold it down for the Jordan clan. Try and just drop 30 and be like, yeah, what's up? I'm here for this 5-on-5.
Yeah. Megatron.
That's what I'm saying. Back. Yeah. Treat me like Jimmy in 2013. If you see me in the end zone, you know it's good.
Right. TDB. That was Jimmy and my saying back in the day. TDB. You know what it stands for? Throw me the damn ball. Huh? If I'm in the end zone, I'm open. Okay. Nobody else around here is 6'7", 270. I'm open.
Nobody. Yeah. And you know, while I've never actually asked you this question, because you know, I'm thinking like draft comparables. Because now I'm thinking about my kids in the draft, your kids in the draft. Every year they come out with like those comparables, right? The next Cam Jordan, the next, you know, is I have not seen a next Drew Brees. And is there one? Have you ever seen somebody comparative? I only bring this up because Teron said Tua is like the next Drew Brees. Teron Armstead over in Miami was like, man, he's got a lot of measurables, a lot of comparables to Drew Brees. And I said, huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think the first thing, well, first off, everybody, and look, Sean Payton used to say this all the time. Like we'd sit around and talk about personnel. You know, you're trying to see how different guys fit into the system, whether it's offense or defense. And look, we're all visual people. And so if you can, anytime you can take someone and give them a comparison, I think it just gives you an immediate vision as to, oh, okay. Like now I see how that guy fits into this offense, because I know the guy's skill set that you were just talking about. If we're saying this guy can eventually be that guy, all right, I've got a vision for him, right? So I think the first thing I think of when somebody says like, oh, that's a Drew Brees. First off, you're talking about a short quarterback. Like, let's just be honest. You're talking about a guy who's like, you know, on the shorter side, right? So maybe part of the 6 foot and under club, like yours truly right here. You know? Woo!
But you finally admit it, bro. I appreciate that. Look, it's about time.
But I like to think that we've changed the perception or the misconception about the short quarterback, right? Like back when I was first coming into the league, like that was a big deal. Even 10 years ago, that was a big deal. I think enough has happened now where you see the Russell Wilsons, the Kyler Murrays, the Baker Mayfields, some of these other guys now that are, man, they're like 6 foot, 6'1". And it's not even discussed anymore. Like that used to be the first thing out of somebody's mouth if they were trying to, you know, talk bad about a kid coming out of, he's only 6 foot. Nobody says that anymore, right? So I think the game has evolved and changed enough to where maybe that misconception's gone. But then, like, let's look at the other things. Okay, I was never the strongest armed guy, right? Like, I felt like I could make all the throws, but I was forced to throw with anticipation because, maybe I didn't have as strong an arm as some of the other guys in the league. Well, what does throwing with anticipation force you to do? It forces you to be prepared and to be on the same page with your receivers, to have incredible chemistry, to know what the defense is, because you got to know where defenders are and where they're not. Because guess what? You aren't always going to see those defenders, but you're going to know the spot and you're going to have to trust that. I've always felt like accuracy is trust and anticipation, right? Trust the play, trust the coverage, trust the guy you're throwing to, anticipate the throw, and the ball is where it needs to be. And you got to expect your guy to be there too. Why do you expect him to do that? Because you've worked at it, right? Because you worked at it.
Did you develop that at Purdue or the Chargers? Or when you didn't just like, you weren't straight out of Texas, like anticipation. I got that.
No, I mean, but I kind of was though. I mean, that's always been my survival mechanism. You know, like you learn to survive, right? I mean, call it what you want. Animals in the wild, like, right? Like you, chameleons change in color so they don't get attacked, you know, like they blend in. Like that's, you have to do what you have to do in order to survive and get the job done. And so if you're not a strong arm guy, you have to learn to throw with anticipation, or else ball's not going to get there on time. Ball's going to get knocked down, picked off, not going to succeed. So I look at guys like Tua. I look at guys like Brock Purdy. to me, maybe those are two of the guys that are most similar from the perspective of, hey, they're shorter quarterbacks, right? They're not the strongest arm guys. I would say, look, man, like they've got a lot of experience. I mean, Tua had a lot of college snaps. Brock Purdy at Iowa State had a lot of college snaps. I was a 3-year starter in college. I think that's something that as scouts look at, you know, young QBs, that can't be underestimated. And that is their experience level in college. Like, look at the hype that was put around guys like Mitch Trubisky, Trey Lance. And I'm not saying those guys aren't going to become, you know, great players, but those guys only had 11 games or less in college, right? So you think about the number of games, the number of snaps, the amount of experience, like you kind of expect them to come in and be this world beater. Well, no, that takes time, right? It takes time because it takes experience and it takes reps and just time on task, right? So I think these are all things that as you look at like this next generation of QBs, man, experience in college is so important, right? And then, you know what? Height's no longer an issue. Like, can this dude process the game? Does he have leadership ability? Can he throw with anticipation? You know, does he fight back from adversity? Like, does he have some mental toughness and fortitude to like overcome tough situations? Because everybody's going to face those tough situations, even within the course of a game. Does this guy have a mechanism where he can move on from bad plays and get on to the next play and not let that affect, you know, what's going to happen next and get right back on track?
Can you quantify that as an attribute though? Like, can you be like, oh, what is his mentality as from drafting somebody? Like, you'd be like, oh, you can only deal with your tangibles. How do you, is there a gauge for that?
Well, no, I'd say this, like, man, like I'm going to bring up names that you know, cause we played with these guys. Like Pierre Thomas was the first guy that came to mind.
Right.
Pierre Thomas, undrafted free agent out of University of Illinois. Right. Nobody's heard of Pierre Thomas. Now, if you really start looking at it, Pierre Thomas, I think, was the all-time Big Ten yardage leader in return yards in the history of the Big Ten. Like, nobody would ever know that. But like, that tells me this dude does stuff when he has the ball in his hands. All right. Number one. Number two, this dude comes in and basically makes our 2017 by blocking like two punts in preseason because we had drafted Antonio Pittman, a running back out of Ohio State, like in the third or fourth round, right, that year.
Yeah.
And here's PT coming in as an undrafted free agent. And basically, he's only going to make the team on special teams, right? So he ends up making the team, but he plays so well in the preseason that, like, we're forced to cut this other guy, right?
Man.
And then he starts off the year at, like, four-string running back. He blocks a punt on Sunday Night Football at Seattle when they're undefeated in 07, right? And then before the end of the year, this dude's the starter. The last game of the season we played at Chicago, we had 100 yards rushing, 100 yards receiving. It's like the first time it ever been done in Saints history.
Drew, what year is that? And why do you remember?
Dude, I got crazy recall when it comes to this kind of stuff because, like, these are life lessons, right? Like, these are the things that I'll sit up at night and tell my kids or, like, something will happen in a game and I'll be like, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story about somebody, right? And, like, Pierre Thomas – here's a dude who was just constantly sold short. Like, man, you're not good enough. We're not going to draft you. Like, you have to make the team on special teams, this and that. Like, this dude did nothing but earn it, like, every single day, right? Until all of a sudden it was time for him to get his opportunity. And guess what? He was ready. He was ready. And he wasn't afraid of failure. He wasn't afraid of adversity. He wasn't afraid of challenges or stuff being hard because they'd been through it, man. He'd been through it his whole life. Right? All the way up through his career too. How many times have we seen guys come in this league and, man, it's just been spoon fed to them. It's been given to them. They never really had to face like that kind of adversity or earn it. Like it's just been coddled a little bit. And all of a sudden stuff gets hard, you know, and I've never had to face this before. I don't know what this is like. And they go in the tank and they don't have that mechanism just to be able to like, man, this is just part of life, right? This is what's here to make me better. And, you know, like I'm ready for this. It's probably the main thing that's wrong with the transfer portal right now. You're just making it easy on everybody. Oh, you're unhappy. Oh, okay. You always have an out. Well, guess what? What happens if you're in a situation where you don't have an out and you got to figure it out? You know what I'm saying? Like that's, we are depriving a lot of these college kids the opportunity to face adversity and to develop the traits and attributes that are going to help them be the best that they can be. Not just in athletics, but in life.
Right, on and off the field.
Driving these kids, man. Let's make them work for it. Make them earn it. I'll get off my soapbox now, Cam.
No, I mean, I'm with you. But also, I'll be seeing these kids leave for these bigger NIL deals. And I'm like, and that's what you get. When you ball out, you get a bigger call. I said, that's
enough. So what are we putting the priority on? Are we putting on education? Are we putting on being in the best system, the best program, the best coach, like the best environment? No.
Maybe. Dollars, hey, maybe, you know, if you're leaving, you know, Ohio State, and you know, because you're not starting there or whatever it is, and you get a transfer into like a University of California at Berkeley, you've just elevated your education right there. Boom. Hey,
but how hard is it to be a college coach right now?
Man. Oh, yeah. No doubt. My D-line coach now is a DC over at Oregon, or my D-line coach from college at Cal is a DC over at Oregon. And I mean, luckily they have 45 different jerseys every other week. So, I mean, it's probably a little easier his ways, but these kids don't care. They're going for dollar signs now.
Unless your name is Coach Prime or you have an endless budget.
Right.
Or you are
Nick Saban.
It's so hard, man. It's hard. This actually, NIL is the, or not NIL, transfer portal is the best thing for Alabama. It's the best thing for Alabama. You know why? Because Alabama can never make a bad investment now. Never make a bad investment. What if I told you, Cam, that you could invest money into something, and if it doesn't work out, you just get your money back and you can move on to the next one? Like, you'd never go wrong, right? My point is this. Alabama's recruiting pitch to kids is, hey, come here. We'll coach you hard. We'll get the best out of you. Every year, we're going to bring in the best players. And if it doesn't work out for you, you can transfer and give us back that scholarship. How about that? Right? And
play. So it works both ways.
No, yeah, but, man, it's really good for Alabama. Think about it. Otherwise, Alabama would have to be really selective, right? Because all of a sudden, you recruit a kid. He comes in. Maybe he's not what you thought he was. You're stuck with him. You're not stuck with him anymore. You just treat him like crap, so he leaves, and then you take a scholarship back, and you just go make another investment. You never lose.
Man.
You never lose.
I mean, that's sort of – I hate, like, now that you say I'm formulating what's going wrong, I'm like, all right. No, that creates a lot of holes in the thing. Like, podcast, these kids right? – yeah, absolutely. So now where do these kids formulate the mindset to become a leader? Like, in my mind, in college, like, that's how I became a leader. It was like that freshman – sure, I was a true freshman, so like I fought to get playing time. I fought, you know, I was on all special teams. In my mind, I popped off my freshman season. I made the first tackle on kickoff against Tennessee at Cal, right? And I was like, I had to work my way up. Even, you know, like that made me who I was. I looked at a defensive end opposite of me, Tyson Alulu, who ended up going to the Jacksonville Jaguars, like top 10 picks or whatever it was. Like, there was a mission there. I was like, I want to be better than him. There's like, you know, goals there. There was never leave Cal, I guess. It was like, how do I make the best of this 4 years that I have?
Yep, exactly. So let's be honest. Like, there was moments during my freshman year where I questioned myself. I questioned, you know, was I doing the right thing? Was I in the right environment? Was I in the right situation? Like, I think every kid has those feelings and emotions. Perfectly natural. But if the answer to that is suck it up, like learn to handle adversity, it's supposed to be hard. Embrace the challenge. You're not going anywhere. Like, then you work through it. On the other hand, if it is, hey, it's okay. You can just leave. You can just hit the reset button on your video game controller, right? You're having a bad game. You just hit the reset button and just go somewhere else and just start over, right? It's okay. And oh, guess what? If it doesn't work out there, then let's hit the reset
again.
Let's just keep kicking this can down the road. Let's just keep transferring out till you find some, like, come on.
Jeez.
Come on. Now, look, I'm not saying that at some point, like, look, Joe Burrow's a perfect example. He goes to Ohio State, red shirts, sits for 2 years, gets beat out time and again. So, you know what? I'm going to transfer out. But, man, he was there 3 seasons at least, I believe. And so he's had to fight through it. He's had to struggle. Now he's got a giant chip on his shoulder when he leaves 3 years later. And look what happens when he goes to LSU. So, look, there are successful examples of that, but it was after a period of time where they had to, like, get through the fire a bit. You know, they had to suffer a bit. And I'm sure that Joe Burrow would recognize the value of being at Ohio State for 3 years.
It probably made him more of a leader because he valued it that much more.
There's no question, man. I'll tell you what really comes as a result of that is gratitude. Mm. And that's probably the greatest trait that any of us could have is gratitude. Yep.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah,
it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Drew, that's bringing it back to you, would that add into your leadership qualities? Like, when did you become a leader? Because when I got there, you already had the huddle chants going. And like, when did you become a leader? You weren't just a born leader. Or maybe you were. Texas football is different. I don't know.
I'd say this. I'd say I've always loved sports, right? I've always gravitated to sports. You know, sports always gave me great confidence. You know, I always felt like I was an athletic kid, you know, so I could pick up a sport and I could, you know, usually figure it out pretty quick, you know, and then I'd be good at it. And then that would build self-esteem and all that stuff. So I've always wanted to be the guy who had the ball in his hands, right? If I'm playing basketball, I'm either the point guard or the shooting guard. If I'm playing baseball, I'm either the pitcher or the shortstop, right? Like the list goes on, right? Like I want to be the dude with the ball in his hands who's going to win the game, right? Or who's in charge, who's in control of the moment and the situation, right? And getting people on the same page and all that. Like I dig that. Like I thrive on that stuff, right? So I do think there is some innate stuff that happens with that where you can just see it in some kids, right? Like when you're on the field, you're like, man, that guy's got some natural leadership ability, right? But so much of what I learned through the years was from having great mentors, from being around incredible players, like watching guys, like when I stepped into the locker room my rookie year, I was staring at Junior Seau and Rodney Harrison on the other side of the ball. And I was terrified of these dudes, but like also like just profound respect. Because these dudes were the first one there. They were working their ass off. Like during practice, man, they did not let anything slide. Nothing. So like they set the tone early as to this is the level of expectation. This is the way that we operate around here. And if you don't like it, then get the out, right? Like you had to get in line. And then I'm right alongside LaDainian Tomlinson, right? And then Lorenzo Neal comes in, who was an awesome mentor for me. I had Doug Flutie there. I mean, And then, you know, I'm playing for Marty Schottenheimer, one of the greatest coaches of all time. Then I come to New Orleans and it's Sean Payton and it's all the guys like you and others that we played with that I had a chance to be around every day and like woke up every day wanting to go win for. So like you're so much of a product of your environment and those that you're surrounded with, and they just bring out the best in you. Like I've always felt like, what's the best leadership trait? Like if you were to boil it down, what's the best description of a leader? It's someone who can bring out the best in other people. And that's done in a lot of different ways, right? Like I would call Marcus Colston and Darren Sproles leaders. Those guys, as you know, did not say much, but all you had to do was watch them work. And if that didn't inspire you, then I don't know if you got a heartbeat, right? Like those dudes would come to work and work their tail off. And like, I was so inspired by those guys every day. So I feel like I'm just a product of being around some great people.
Right. I mean, you say that and you can, you know, Marcus Colston, 9 1,000-yard seasons, called him the quiet storm. But it does say something for the guys who work and talk and inspire, because you can be inspired by watching anybody, you know? But when you talk that talk and you walk that walk, then like that's where in my mind you become a leader. Like you can dub anybody a captain. I feel like a captain is a patch. A leader is something more. Like it feels like a leader is a rally point. And that's what I like to be. Like I want to be a rally point because I'm balling, because I'm doing things the right way. Like you look, you just gravitate towards, all right, well, if he's doing this, I can push myself to be more. So that's why you were a rally point, like a leader. You know, there's certain guys you just look for, like, oh, the amount of work that he puts in, I got to put in more. Like, you're challenging me to be better. You know, like, that's what I like. Like, oh, we talk about excellence. Well, that's why we're being excellent, because there's so many things that were going on. But now that I got you on this podcast, what do you see from this first 7 weeks of New Orleans Saints football? And how can that be cleared up and or get better? How would you assess us? Let's go with that word. Yeah.
I mean, look, I think defensively, you guys have been pretty consistent. I think offensively, it's been a bit inconsistent. Mm-hmm. I think there's, as you look at every game you've played, I think you would look at it and say, man, there's no reason why you couldn't have won all of them. I know Tampa got a little out of control, right? But besides that, I mean, you guys could be sitting here at whatever, 7-1.
6-1. You know? Yeah, right. We could be sitting at 6-1, respectively. Yeah. Just
right. So, you know, that part's kind of frustrating because I think you know that there's more in the tank. Look, I think all the pieces are there. Like, it'd be one thing if you were sitting here saying, man, I think, you know, you've had some significant injuries or, you know, you're really missing some key components. I don't think you are at all. I don't think you are at all. I think it's certainly, as I look at it, like I look offensive side of the ball, you know, man, when we go up tempo, I think we are highly effective. I think that creates a great rhythm for the offense. I think that's when we are at our best. I think that was shown in the fourth quarter the other night, right? We get down, all of a sudden we're up tempo, man, we're moving the ball right down the field. And I'm it's not like they were just playing prevent and letting it happen. I mean, they were running the same pressures, they were doing the same stuff they were doing the whole game. We were just a bit more on point because we had this rhythm and this flow going.
Sense of urgency. I feel like when teams go huddle up, it's either one, they're trying to slow the defense down, or two, their desperation is kicked in.
Yeah. I would say this, man. We have always been an offense that had a lot of things for a defense to worry about. You got Kamara in the backfield. You got tight ends that are explosive. You got receivers all over the place, playmakers that are tough one-on-one matchups, right? So I still feel like that is the case, right? Like I still see Mike T being a guy who can catch 7 or 8 balls a game. I see dudes in Olave and Shaheed that are like Meacham and Devery were for us back, you know, in that window from 7 to 13, where like air raid, like push the ball down the field. You know, when you get in the red zone, we said it earlier in the show.
Strike.
Well, if Jimmy's standing in the end zone, I don't care who's there or who's covering him. That'd be a great spot to use him. I mean, look, there's Taysom Hill. It's like I'm still amazed at like everything that I see from him, and I should know better. I should know better because I've seen everything this dude can do, and yet I'm sitting there watching the game on Thursday night, and the guy was the tight end in 2 minutes. He probably had 35 snaps at the tight end position, in addition to quarterback, in addition to running back, in addition to all these other positions that he plays. And it's still like, man, it's like he's one of the greatest weapons in the league, right? And so I think, like, if anything, that would just get me really excited. And as this continues to unfold, I think with more of a tempo and just kind of, you know, creating the rhythm, getting the ball into these playmakers' hands in space, right, which we've got plenty of them, and then just finding those matchup problems that we've got them all over the field. I think that we're in a great spot. I really do.
I feel like there's so much potential. We have to capitalize like now. It's becoming, you know, we used to have those gotta have it wins. It's becoming in that sense of like, we have to be able to turn it on now, you know? And, you know, as you've taught me over the years, leadership is so important in these locker rooms. It's locker room feel, it's leadership, and it's these rally points. That this is where you take that, hey, okay, we're 3-4. This is how we go beyond to that next step. It's time to elevate. And it starts with the leaders up top. So I appreciate you tuning in, bro. I know you got things you got to do. I want to talk about pickleball and how your game is because I still have yet to do it. But we'll talk about that another day. I just want to know, it's being a pickleball owner.
Will you get? We've got to get the Saints to build a couple pickleball courts right there next to the indoor facility, and we can get some games going. All right, like a little off season, maybe a little Tuesday off day run around. You know, like let's get this going.
I mean, you're already a pickleball team owner. How much longer do I have to wait till I just hear that ticker go across? Drew Brees, Miss B, come on. I'm just saying. Fine, you say no.
Yeah, look, I like leaving it to the pros there. You know, I'll just kind of, you know, just keep working behind the scenes here.
Okay, perfect. Appreciate you topping in, bro. So there you have it. It's a wrap. I just want to say a huge thank you to all my awesome listeners for rocking with me. I've got a whole locker room full of my favorite interviews from season one coming your way. But before I go, you know the drill. Come on now. Make sure to drop us a 5-star rating or review and hit that follow button on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also catch us on YouTube on the official YouTube page of the NFL. Till next time, I'm out.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.